This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
There's no sense of panic here, but there is fear. The Japanese government is telling people the danger from radiation so far is extremely small, but at the same time, that today's third explosion may have damaged the containment vessel around one of the reactor cores. If that is the case, then the situation here could still become very serious. Rupert Wingfield Hayes, BBC News, in Tokyo.
Desperate for the latest information, people here at Shinbashi Station are trying to find out the schedule for rolling blackouts.
Pachinko jingle in space, torpedo beams, comic book violence and escaping steam, gray-suited businessmen hissing against a wall, touch a crumbling guardrail, slow motion car fall. Tokyo, I never can sleep in your arms. Mine keeps on ringing like a fire alarm. Me and all these other dice bouncing around in the cup. Did you have to show me that accident scene? Didn't I get enough shaking up? Still I'm gonna miss you.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock as Japan enters history with the world's most extended nuclear disaster. At least seven nuclear reactors and several pools burning with nuclear waste, with a chain of violent explosions, fire, and radiation blowing from the coast to the capital. I'm Alex Smith. Like you, I've been through a week of jaw-dropping news. It has been painful and emotional, even across a far ocean, to record the fear, suffering, and mass deaths in Japan. I have friends in Japan. I feel for them. I worry for them. That island was moved 8 feet closer to the United States by the quake and then washed over by towering seas. Just like 9/11, the world will never be the same. And just like 9/11, the government and a corporation are withholding, hiding what happens. We are going to peer through the mist with a collection of quick audio clips I've gathered for you literally day and night. You will hear the fog and calls for truth. Under the noise of major media, the ugly face of nuclear terror emerges, not just in Japan, but in Europe, China, Canada, and certainly the biggest nuclear power, the United States. The truth was always out there. Now it's in here. When the lights go out, the danger goes on and on and on. Along the way, I'll interview Nicole Foss from one of the most popular financial blogs anywhere, The Automatic Earth. It turns out she is also a published nuclear expert. We reached her in Eastern Europe late one night. And when we are done with the giant Japan-like risk waiting in American nuclear plants from New England to California, we'll take a quick few minutes to talk with Greenpeace nuclear campaigner Sean Patrick, how Canada pays billions in nuclear support for nothing at all while cutting back the backup systems. Our music starts with Bruce Coburn's Tokyo and ends with the new single by Mother Mother, just out in the new album called Eureka. ABC Australia, Monday the 14th.
We're just hearing some sirens and there's choppers flying overhead. Now, the word has come through. We think there's been an explosion at the nuclear reactor to the south of here. So people have just run through and told us that we're going to have to leave here very soon because of the danger of radiation coming up the coast from down the south.
BBC, Monday the 14th.
Well, welcome to Tokyo. I'm Matt Fine. Let me bring you up to speed with some breaking news. We heard about half an hour ago that at 10 past 6 this morning local time, just after daybreak, there was a third explosion at the second reactor at the Fukushima nuclear plant. Remember, that's the plant where we had an explosion on Saturday and on Monday morning. Well, now there's a third explosion in the second reactor, and news has just come through that the authorities fear that the containment wall made of steel around the core of that reactor may have been damaged. Still a big question mark over that. But let's just listen to what state television announced about this explosion just a few minutes ago.
A big blast was heard at number two reactor, indicating that something wrong happened to the container vessel.
What do you think? Will the hundreds of thousands of Japanese nuclear evacuees ever go home? How will Japan power the industries that help feed the world economy? Are we going to wait for our own reactors to blow? I'll tell you up front, I've chosen voices that have been exiled from the mainstream media for far too long. The people who warned the Japanese government and the Japanese people this would happen. The voice calling the rest of us to take action now, to disarm the terror of nuclear technology. We slept in the dream of experts for too long already. Japan is the alarm clock for an age ending and a new time of clean, safe power.
The Bank of Japan is also doing its part. Governor Masaaki Shirakawa announced a record cash injection into the money markets on Monday.
First of all, it is important to meet the cash needs of the people affected. The Bank of Japan and private banks will cooperate fully to make cash available, so we would like everyone to be reassured.
You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
This is Radio EcoShock. Our next guest is Nicole Foss, a well-known writer at the blog The Automatic Earth, one of the world's most read financial blogs. Nicole, you recently posted a piece where you questioned whether the massive nuclear accident in Japan was really a black swan event. Why?
Yes, I think essentially they were not unpredictable. Really, something is only a black swan if it could not have been foreseen. And I think this event really was quite foreseeable.
I should point out to listeners that you, Nicole, are not just an occasional blogger. You actually have nuclear experience and nuclear education. Tell us briefly about that.
Well, my master's thesis was on nuclear safety in Eastern Europe, and then I was a research fellow at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies after that, where I wrote a major monograph on the same topic. I developed the ideas from my thesis into a much larger piece of work.
If this was foreseeable, Japan was supposed to be the most advanced nuclear technology country in the world, and yet it has fallen down. What does that mean for nuclear power around the world?
Well, nuclear power does not face the same risks in every place. I would certainly regard nuclear power in an extremely active seismic zone as a very bad idea. Not everywhere is an active seismic zone. So I think there are many locational risks. Japan, I think, should have looked at what could have happened in more depth than they did. The design basis accident for this plant was an earthquake of 7.9. In fact, the plants did withstand the earthquakes. They did shut down as they were designed to do. What took out the cooling systems was the tsunami, but tsunamis are predictable if you have an earthquake. So I think they should have foreseen this. They should not have left the station as vulnerable to station blackout, the loss of external power so that you can no longer run the cooling pumps. That is the major problem at Fukushima today.
But I'm reading, Nicole, that many American plants have the same problem if they encounter a blackout, which could come from an ice storm, it could come from a terrorist attack. There are so many reasons other than seismic. So I'm wondering if we shouldn't have a review, at least, of the safety of nuclear plants in America.
I'm sure we will, and not just in America, but in many other places too. Today, Germany made the decision not to extend the life of a fleet of reactors that they had been considering extending the life for. So I think people are already rethinking what the risks of nuclear power might be. And certainly anything in a seismic zone or any number of other risks that you mentioned, those things should be reassessed. And we should look at whether or not the design basis accident was, in fact, taking enough risks into account. And I would argue in many cases it was not. And so some of these plants are probably not operating at an acceptable risk level. But it may depend on the plant and what sort of conditions they face. We can never protect ourselves against absolutely everything, because everything we try to protect ourselves from costs a certain amount of money. Some risks you simply can't protect yourself from at all. But some things really are foreseeable, and we should think about what we're doing in areas where the risks are clear and the consequences are significant.
I've just listened, Nicole Foss, to some media pundits who say that this will eventually be positive for the economy of Japan. As the country rebuilds, they'll have to spend more government money and so on. Do you see this developing as positive for Japan?
Not even slightly. I think that's a completely ridiculous assertion. I think it's very likely to be Japan's Hurricane Katrina times 100. Japan is in the worst position in the whole world in terms of debt to GDP at 466%. They're in a hole already. They've been trying to stimulate their economy for 20-something years. It won't work now. The idea that if you destroy something and then you have to fix it, that will somehow improve your economy is called the broken window fallacy, and it isn't going to work. I don't know where they think they're going to get the money to recover from the kind of damage that they've seen. America couldn't do it in New Orleans, even although this was one city. This is the entire Japanese coast that we've been looking at levels of utter devastation. So I think it's inconceivable that this is going to be in any way a benefit for the Japanese economy. Much of this damage may simply never really be repaired. People may simply retreat from the coasts in that area. Because if you look at the kind of debris that's there and the kind of destruction, I cannot imagine how that would be repaired anytime soon, especially by a country that is already in the world's worst position in terms of debt.
As we've seen, major Japanese companies from Toyota on down and the semiconductor companies like Sony have closed temporarily, and we have a just-in-time delivery system and globalization. Do you see knock-on effects for economies in other parts of the world?
Oh, very much so. I think especially semiconductors and things like that, those require an absolutely secure source of power, because they have to be kept so clean, so dust-free. If the power goes down, you might as well bulldoze the plant, because the kind of contamination that will have entered will be incompatible with the production of chips. So I think we're definitely looking at impacts there. The power system in Japan is not going to be stable for a while to come, because they are so dependent on nuclear power. This accident has taken, so far, there are 6 reactors at Fukushima 1 that will be out of commission probably permanently. Quite likely the 4 reactors at Fukushima 2 and the 3 at Onagawa as well will, if they ever come back online, will not come back online anytime soon. So Japan will be scrambling to find more LNG and things like that. I don't think it's going to be able to find the amount it needs. So it is going to be facing energy limits. The extent to which other countries are dependent on products that come out of Japan, there will be knock-on effects. I think the major knock-on effect will simply be the spread of fear. And that is what drives markets. So we saw strong market declines today, not just in Japan, but in many other places, because fear is catching. And we've been very close to the end of the current market rally for a while. I think we're very likely to be seeing the next phase of the credit crunch. And really, all it takes is a shift towards fear being the dominant emotion for that to happen. And I think that's very much what we're seeing worldwide today.
What are the major things we should be watching for in the days and weeks ahead? Let's start with nuclear power.
Well, I think in terms of the plants actually in Japan, we need to watch the extent to which they are capable of controlling them. Some of the other reactors at other sites, so far they are managing to maintain enough backup power that they're not losing control of the situation. We need to watch carefully for the potential for them to lose control of that situation in a wider range of reactors. We need to look at whether there are going to be nuclear emissions. There already have been some. I think it's quite clear that the containment has been breached at least some of these reactors. We haven't seen the end of this. We could still see full meltdowns that could lead to steam explosions that could spread reactive material around. I don't think we're looking by any stretch of the imagination at another Chernobyl. That same accident scenario simply really could not happen because Chernobyl-type reactors have completely different accident scenarios than boiling water reactors. So I think we need to very carefully watch what's happening in Japan with this particular plant and the neighboring plants as well. And then to what extent can Japan bring its power production back online and begin to restart its economy? But I think there are going to be major effects in Japan that will last for years, if not decades, as a result of this.
You write about economics, and in the shadow banking system and in the financial world, we've had suggestions that Japanese pension funds or corporations or even the government will have to withdraw money from U.S. treasuries, or perhaps they won't finance new Eurozone materials that need to be rolled over. Do you see problems there?
Not really. I think we're going to be looking at capital flight from the areas where there is the perception of risk to the areas where there is not. And risk perception does not line up with the fundamentals. So if you look at the debt conditions of the United States, they're horrendous. But the credit default swap spreads indicate that the market perception of risk for the United States is very low, whereas in Europe, it's very high. Well, in parts of Europe anyway, it's high and increasing for a number of peripheral European states. Up to now, it has been very low for Japan. I think the risk for Japan is going to start rising. Anywhere where the risks are perceived to be high, you're likely to see capital flight. So I think we will see capital flight from the periphery of Europe. We may start to see capital flight from Japan as well if the risk of the perceived risk of default starts to increase there. And there's every reason why it should, because Japan is in an incredibly deep hole with debt. And the markets only have two positions. There's complacency and there's panic. So I think the odds that the market may go from complacency to panic with Japan could be quite high. And already we're seeing risks rise in peripheral Europe. I think the U.S. would actually benefit from that situation because the risk in the U.S. is perceived to be low, and money tends to flow from areas of perceived high risk to areas of perceived low risk.
On a more personal level, should we as ordinary people be taking lessons from the long lines for food and gas in Japan to prepare ourselves individually with at least the basics to last for 72 hours for any kind of problem that might arise?
Absolutely. 72 hours is really not a lot for people to be able to look after themselves. And there are so many things that could cause problems that would last at least that long. I'm thinking of the ice storm in particular in Eastern Ontario and Western Quebec that shut down systems for quite a while. So I think absolutely there is a level of personal preparedness that we should all undertake. But I think we should, beyond that, be looking at community preparedness and a lot more emphasis on reintroducing local self-sufficiency and local resilience. I think that is incredibly important. We need to start rebuilding communities. We need to build bottom-up systems that can provide for some of the essentials of our own existence so that we are not so dependent on all these top-down systems that I think are going to prove to be very brittle and acutely vulnerable to cascading system failure. And I think we're going to see the potential for that in Japan. We really do need to learn those lessons here.
As we wrap up, Nicole Foss, is there something you would like to add for our listeners?
Well, I think we need to look at the potential for the credit crisis to resume. We've been saying for a long time at the Automatic Earth that the credit crisis was by no means over, that we were closer to the beginning than the end, and that there was a lot further to go. I think we are now looking at the end of the rally and the beginning of the next phase of the credit crunch. So I think basically we have to think iceberg ahead. Is there any way we can turn the ship? And if we can't turn the ship, we may need to man the lifeboats.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We've been speaking with Nicole Foss, who also blogs as Stoneley at the Automatic Earth. That's theautomaticearth.blogspot.com. And Nicole also does very popular speaking tours, so if you want to be part of that, be sure and contact the Automatic Earth blog. Thank you so much, Nicole Foss. Russia Today, Monday the 14th.
Panic, actually, on the coast here. The panic is being shown by people lining up outside supermarkets. One queue we saw outside the main supermarket in the center of town was about a kilometer long, and that's no exaggeration. People have been queuing up overnight to try and stock up on food. So people are obviously concerned that potentially the spread of radiation might mean they have to stay inside, or another earthquake could lead to food shortages. Already there are food shortages in the town and in this whole prefecture, in fact. One man yesterday we met had to travel 70 kilometers to stock up on food. Right now, several of the food shops are limiting people to five items maximum, and they're having to queue up hours at a time to get into the shop. So obviously there is some level of panic. People aren't showing it on the surface, but they're definitely concerned, to be so much so they're stocking up on food and also fuel. On our way here yet last night, we saw a long queue of cars, again about a kilometre long, outside one of the few petrol stations that were open in the Fukushima prefecture. And there they were only being limited to 20 litres each of petrol. So there's definite fears of just here of the necessities.
This is Alex. Let me tell you exactly what is happening at the 7 stricken reactors in Japan. Oh, wait, no, I can't. Because apparently Japan is on another planet behind the blackout screen. Media planes are forbidden to fly over the worst nuclear plant, Fukushima 1. Nobody is allowed closer than 10 miles. The cameras that showed us the first three explosions have apparently been taken down. 50, or is it 70, brave workers are huddled in a cement bunker somewhere in the plant. The buildings and radioactive pools around them are too hot, both in radiation and in raw temperature, reaching into the thousands of degrees in places for them to inspect. Whatever they are reporting gets boiled down to repetitive press conference pleas by the Japanese Prime Minister or the Cabinet Chief to remain calm. Remain calm. Everything is safe. Just try and get some hard measurements or even the facts about the latest explosion, even 6 hours after it happens. Nobody knows. As though we don't have satellites and war rooms and experts watching from all over the world. As though we are all blind or blinded. I'll devote the next segment of Radio EcoShock to the cries for information, the kind people on the ground need to cope, to survive without cancer, the figures which could warn Americans and Canadians on the West Coast if the worst happens and the radiation comes. I don't think it will, but it could. The knowledge that we need to be human in a world gone mad. Now the dates in the following audio clips are North American one day behind Japan.
Nuclear power is the most frightening thing, even more than a tsunami. The government, the ruling party, the administrators, nobody tells us, the citizens, what is really happening.
Al Jazeera, Saturday the 12th.
Trying to placate people's fears and telling them to continue to remain calm despite all of this?
That's right. There was a news conference, the second in an evening, from the Chief Cabinet Secretary, Yukio Edono, last night, Saturday night, Japan time. He was trying to tell people that basically the amount of radiation had leaking from the first reactor at Fukushima number one had dissipated greatly, that it had gone down by a factor of more than 10 since the moments directly after the explosion. And he did appeal for calm, but that's what they've been doing really since the first inklings of an issue with the nuclear power stations came about on Friday. The Prime Minister then saying that there was no indication of any readings of radioactivity. That obviously has been disproven since.
CNN, Saturday the 12th.
By the government. They're not taking it lightly, but at the same time, they don't want to see people panic here as well, and they are saying that the radioactive levels that have, or radioactivity that has seeped out into the atmosphere, have been at levels that are not going to cause harm. But here's the problem.
CNN, Saturday the 12th.
But we understand now, according to the Nuclear Safety Energy Agency, that this was a hydrogen explosion. It was not an explosion related to the reactor itself. They say that no harmless materials were released into the atmosphere. They say there has been no recorded increase in radioactivity since that explosion. The Prime Minister, Nader Khan, has also said that no one has yet been affected by radioactivity. But the same agency, the nuclear officials here, also saying that some radioactive material was released into the atmosphere that happened earlier today. It was recorded at 8 times higher than the normal level just outside the perimeter of the plant. But again, they're saying that is not enough to cause any problems to the people in the vicinity. But as I say, they have increased that throughout the day, and now you have this 20-kilometre, 12-13-mile exclusion zone. Andrew?
NHK World, Monday the 14th.
Now, the values of this radioactive reading, what is the latest information? In the area around the number one power plant, right after the explosion, 965.5 microsievert per hour was the level. However, after that, this figure went down. In an hour later, at 7:05, it went down to 387.3 microsievert. So these figures, compared to normal days, it is high. Well, let's say 5 microsievert per hour. If it's 5 microsieverts per hour, or if it goes above that, it means that you need to evacuate indoors and stay indoors.
The Tokyo Electric Power Company's response has been not so appropriate so far. The explanation by the Tokyo Electric Power Company has been very unclear so far in the news conferences. And information sharing is very slow, the process of sharing information. And radiation cannot be felt, or we cannot smell radiation, so the residents living near this power plant are very much concerned. If the company says that this does not pose any immediate human impact, and then the company must be open to the information. Professor Sekimura, what is needed in the future?
MSNBC, Tuesday the 15th.
At the TEPCO news conference on the third explosion at a Japanese nuclear reactor tonight, reporters were visibly angry with the company's explanation of what happened with that explosion. To our understanding of an already very stressful situation in Japan, we can also add Japan's history, frankly, of scandals and cover-ups related to nuclear power and safety. In 1995 in Japan, when a reactor caught fire, the government-run agency in charge of that reactor tried to cover up how bad the fire was by releasing a doctored video of the accident. In 2002, at TEPCO, the company that owns the plants that are currently in crisis, the president of TEPCO and 4 other senior executives were forced to quit when it was revealed that TEPCO had been falsifying safety records at its nuclear plants for years, dating back to the 1980s. Another Japanese nuclear power plant operator was forced to shut down a reactor in 2007 after it acknowledged it had covered up 15 minutes of near disaster in 1999, when an accident involving 3 fuel rods caused an out-of-control nuclear chain reaction. The money quote in that investigation was this, quote, "It happened at around 2 or 3 a.m., so people probably thought no one would notice." This crisis is, of course, now unfolding in much different circumstances, but some of the reporters' anger at that TEPCO presser tonight reflects the suspicion and frustration that we are still dependent for much of the most crucial information in events like this on sources that have a vested interest in keeping us all calm and deflecting suspicion and anger away from themselves. It is probably unavoidable, and it is frustrating as all heck.
Democracy Now!, Monday the 14th.
You have said, Kevin Camps, that a cover-up is a huge part of this story, as it was with Chernobyl. Why?
Well, I mean, as Harvey indicated, if the U.S. Navy, and as you reported, if the U.S. Navy, which is 100 miles away, has to move an aircraft carrier away from the shore because the radioactivity levels are of concern, then all of these assurances by Tokyo Electric Power Company and the Japanese government that everything's really okay. I mean, a statement made 2 days ago by the chief spokesman for the government, the secretary of the cabinet, was that the evacuation is underway and the wind is blowing out to sea, so everything's really going to be okay. Well, we have indications that the wind direction may change towards the mainland of Japan. So those false assurances are not helping the situation. And another question that needs to be asked is, well, if the wind is blowing out to sea, what's in that direction? Well, the United States is in that direction. And we see, again, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission saying no harmful level of radioactivity could reach the United States. Well, we're in the middle of this crisis. A new reactor is now melting down. How did they determine that the containments are going to hold? How did they determine that the radioactivity will not blow in large quantities to the United States?
Democracy Now!, Monday the 14th.
I want to go back to Yurika Ayukawa joining us from Tokyo and also share with you our condolences for the horrific catastrophe that your country is undergoing right now. You're formerly with the Citizens Nuclear Information Center, now a professor of the environment at Chiba University in Japan. What is the government telling you, and are you satisfied with that right now?
What the government and the Tokyo Electric is saying is what just as just Kevin explained. They are trying to downgrade or the critical situation and make the people don't get worried. Or so we are totally not sure. There's no transparency about the information that they are saying. They don't give enough what they, actually maybe they don't actually know precisely what to say, but nothing concrete is being announced. So we don't know what is really going on. So there's no transparency in what they're speaking. So on the other hand, just as Kevin said, there's nothing spoken about the spent fuel pools. So that's maybe a really another hazardous matter that will come up later after this thing is, finished. And I'm very unsatisfied with how the government is treating this. And if there was an article in the New York Times about this radioactive contamination by U.S. Air flight, the U.S. Navy, I wish you could make it a big story that could appear in the Japanese newspapers, because all the Japanese people are thinking, or the government is thinking, is only about Japan. They are not thinking what kind of effects it will bring to other countries. And I just read that the French embassy is making the French people living in Japan to leave the country. It's really that kind of thing should make news in Japan. But
Yurika Ayukawa, can you also talk about the number of people, more than 180,000 people have been evacuated around one of the nuclear power plants. Up to 160 may have been exposed with radiation. Of course, this is very early on to know this. May not be able to return for a long time.
Not all media is created equally, as we certainly found out this past week. Compare this coverage early on the Friday night, first from ABC, then Al Jazeera, and finally Russia Today.
More now on the nuclear facility we just mentioned in Japan that is raising so much concern. The cooling system failed, prompting local evacuations. And we're joined now by our Ned Potter with more on this alarming situation. Ned, it seems like the concern is actually growing over one power plant in particular.
Well, the plant is called the Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Power Plant. It's northeast of Tokyo, and the Nuclear Safety Agency in Japan was trying to play down the issue. It said there has been no radiation leak. The plant did shut down the way it was supposed to, but they were keeping people 2 kilometers, about 3 kilometers, about 2 miles away, and privately, they have said to American authorities that they were concerned.
Well, let's get more on what Japan is calling an atomic emergency. Radiation levels at a nuclear plant damaged by the quake have been recorded at 1,000 times above normal. People living near the Fukushima plant, 240 kilometers north of Tokyo, have been evacuated. The cooling systems in two reactors failed when the quake caused a power outage. Steam is being released to relieve the pressure. The vapor is radioactive, but safety officials say there's no immediate health hazard. Japan's Prime Minister Naoto Kan says the nuclear facility is his most pressing concern.
An emergency situation, meantime, has been declared at the Fukushima nuclear plant in the northeast of the country after it was damaged. The pressure inside the reactor has been rising tonight, raising fears of a radiation leak. However, Japan's Nuclear Safety Agency says to try to reduce the pressure, radioactive vapor may be released, and that poses no risk to humans or the environment.
By the way, I put up a slew of handy Japan nuclear disaster links in my Radio EcoShock blog for the week of March 16, 2011, including a page holding video links from 15 live video feeds, a news junkie's delight, except the news is poisonous these days. Find that at ecoshock.info. If you are at a computer right now, go ahead, ecoshock.info, while you listen. I also put out three Japan Atomic Emergency Bulletins. That's what they called it, the government, Atomic Emergency. And I put it in Radio EcoShock podcasts for our subscribers. And that's a good reason to subscribe to the free podcast. Click on the podcast button right on your main page at ecoshock.org or get it from iTunes or one of the many other repackagers. And be ready. Here are just a few more clips from the disaster before we investigate an even bigger developing story beyond reactor buildings and reactors themselves. NHK, Friday the 11th.
You've just tuned in to NHK World. We're covering the situation here in Japan. According to the Nuclear Power Security Agency, five nuclear power plants in northeastern Japan have been shut down. Now, according to the Transport Ministry, Haneda International Airport has closed all runways. Haneda International Airport in Tokyo has closed all runways.
CNN, Monday the 14th.
The three there, right here, all three are in trouble tonight. All three have had various degrees of cooling issues and perhaps meltdowns in the core. It is number two they are most worried about. Earlier today, they said all of the rods had been fully exposed. About 2.5 hours ago, another explosion at reactor two. And what Tokyo officials are saying is the radioactive readings have gone up and they've evacuated operators not directly involved with the most urgent of the operations there. The damage was done to the suppression pool, and that's what gets dangerous. That is down in here. You have a nuclear reactor. You have the rods right here. These are highly radioactive. You need to keep the temperatures cool in here to keep from having a meltdown. These have been fully exposed, which raises the risks of a full meltdown, and now they're saying there's been some sort of a problem in the suppression pool, evacuation of the operators being carried out. This is the first time in this crisis that has happened, some operators being taken out. Now, we want to be careful with the information. We are trying to get more on this information, but this is a deepening nuclear crisis at a major nuclear facility. Three reactors in trouble, one in grave trouble. It's about 150 miles to the north of Tokyo.
BBC, Tuesday the 15th.
All eyes are still on the nuclear installation at Fukushima Daiichi, about 140 miles north of here. And this is the place, of course, where there have already been three explosions and one fire in the last few days. This morning, there are reports of yet another fire in another reactor. And the spent fuel rods that are stored in reactors 5 and 6 are now apparently also heating up. All very unsettling indeed.
Yes, the waste pools. Starting on Friday, I heard small voices, including from Greenpeace, saying, what about the waste pools? Why haven't we heard any reports about that? Indeed, these watery graves for all the nuclear waste ever burned by each reactor seem to be a mystery, even to the biggest, most influential media. The government said nothing. The utility said nothing. But nuclear waste is far from dead. It will live on in danger for more than 100,000 years, our awful gift to humanity and all the other species, perhaps to the end of humanity. Also, one or two generations could keep all the gadgets always on and waste electricity in a million wonderful ways. Until the spent, but still deadly with radioactivity, the spent fuel rods are kept constantly cooled by water. They can catch fire and emit far more radioactivity than Chernobyl ever did. It can't blow up into the upper atmosphere like the Soviet reactor, but it can blow in the wind for generation after generation until the fires are put out and the pumping resumed almost forever. Now that the Japanese government admits the one and perhaps several waste pools are out of control, out of water and burning, it's time to talk about them, no? Democracy Now, Monday the 14th.
Lane and Stephen here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue on the catastrophe in Japan, we turn now to Kevin Camps, specialist in nuclear waste at Nuclear Watch Group Beyond Nuclear. Last year, he was in Japan assessing the state of the nuclear facilities there. Kevin Camps, explain exactly what is happening in these nuclear reactors. Japan has some 55 nuclear plants, nuclear reactors within five nuclear plants.
Yes, Amy. As your Japanese guest said, the cores of at least three reactors now at Fukushima Daiichi are uncovered from water, and so therefore a meltdown is likely underway at three reactors. Something that has not gotten much mention yet are the pools of high-level radioactive waste at these very same reactors, which also need cooling. They need electricity to cool, to circulate the water with circulation pumps. And two of these three reactors have suffered explosions, as your guests may have seen online in videos. And the pools that hold the high-level radioactive waste are located above, just slightly above and to the right of the reactors. Yes, so our hope and our prayer at this point is that not only the reactor itself, the containment around the reactor, but also the pools, which contain massive amounts of radioactivity, have somehow remained intact. That's what the officials are saying. As Harvey said, we don't know whether to believe them or not. In the pools, you have a lot of radioactive waste, which contains a lot of hazardous radioactivity. And now, because those explosions took place at two of those reactors, that is open to the sky at this point. There is no roof or walls over the pools. And the hope is, but we have indications that at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1, that the pool is experiencing difficulty in cooling the waste because electricity has been lost. They lost the electricity grid with the earthquake. They lost the emergency diesel generators with the tsunami. The backup batteries only had a life of 4 to 8 hours. That's long past. And I just wanted to comment on what Fertel of Nuclear Energy Institute said. Oh, we have great earthquake regulations in the United States. The reactor that got me involved in this issue in southwest Michigan, Palisades Nuclear Power Plant, has been storing its high-level radioactive waste in outdoor silos of concrete and steel on the beach of Lake Michigan, 100 yards from the water, in violation of NRC earthquake regulations since 1993. An NRC whistleblower in Chicago called attention to this problem in 1994. Nothing's been done. There are two dozen containers, dry casks, of high-level radioactive waste next to the drinking water supply for 40 million people downstream in the U.S. and Canada in violation of NRC earthquake regulations. And another reactor in the U.S., Fermi 2, also in Michigan, just another example of how safety is being just thrown to the wind. The emergency diesel generators, which have proven to be such a central component of this disaster in Japan because they were located vulnerable to the tsunami. What appears to have happened is the tsunami flooded the basements where these emergency diesel generator connections are at. So even though they brought in mobile units, new emergency diesel generators to hook them up to run the safety systems, the basements were flooded where they needed to do the hookup. Well, at Fermi 2 in Michigan, again, the same exact design as the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1, the emergency diesel generators in the year 2006 were discovered to have not been operable for 20 years. From 1986 to 2006, the emergency diesel generators at Fermi 2 in Michigan would not have operated if called upon. So thank God that they were not needed during that 20-year period of time, or we could have lost Detroit, or we could have lost Toledo, or we could have lost Windsor, Ontario. That's the level of safety with the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the industry in this country.
We don't have time to cover all the nuclear backlash in Europe, the 50,000-plus people who formed that human chain from Stuttgart, Germany, to an old nuclear plant the government promised to close and then reneged, After the Japanese debacle and with elections looming, German Chancellor Angela Merkel suddenly revised her decision to allow 10 aging nuclear plants to continue operating. The Swiss have also called off planned new reactors. There is a chain reaction of caution and nuclear fear spreading around the world. I do want to share a couple of important clips with our American listeners before we get to Canada. Democracy Now!, Monday the 14th.
I was in Japan in the mid-1970s. That's exactly what they said about Fukushima. I spoke at the Kashiwazaki plant, which less than 5 years ago was also hit by a huge earthquake, and 7 reactors shut there. The people of Japan were repeatedly assured that this could not happen. Those reactors in Japan and the ones in the United States are designed to withstand a 7.5 Richter earthquake, and this is a 9.0, which is more than 10, significantly higher impact than what they're designed to withstand. We're also seeing pressures inside these reactor pressure vessels and containment domes that are in excess of design capacity. The nuclear industry is defending a product that cannot withstand Mother Nature, both in the United States and Japan. You have to remember that the Japanese industry is highly advanced. Both Westinghouse and General Electric, the two major purveyors of nuclear plants in the United States, are now owned by Japanese companies. This is not the Soviet Union. This is a highly advanced country that cannot cope with nuclear power plants that have been sustained damage that was predicted. We predicted that these nuclear plants would be hit by earthquakes and by tsunamis, and the Japanese government and the nuclear industry laughed it off, just as Mr. Furtick has done yesterday. Every nuclear plant in the United States is susceptible to this kind of damage and this kind of disaster, and it's time that they be shut in any kind of prudent mindset that will protect the people of this country and our economy, by the way, as we're going to see what's happening to the Japanese economy.
We're speaking with anti-nuclear activist Harvey Wasserman, speaking to us from Columbus, Ohio.
MSNBC, Monday the 14th.
Located in Southern California, near the San Andreas fault line. The San Onofre site is a particular safety risk. According to Massachusetts Congressman Edward Markey, the ranking Democrat on the House Natural Resources Committee.
They are in the process right now with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission of finishing a process that will make it possible to build and license a Westinghouse AP1000 reactor. One of the senior scientists at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said that's the kind of plant that could crack, shatter like a glass cup under stress.
Congressman Markey has called on President Obama and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to consider imposing a moratorium on building nuclear power plants in seismically active areas. That's an overreaction, according to Republican Senator Lamar Alexander, whose home state of Tennessee operates 3 nuclear reactors.
It's important that we be clear about the risks that each type of energy poses. But it's also important to remember that we don't abandon highway systems because bridges and overpasses collapse during earthquakes. The 1.6 million of us who fly daily would not stop flying after a tragic airplane crash.
Democracy Now!, Monday the 14th.
I want to go back to Harvey Wasserman. The news out of Switzerland, they've suspended the approvals process for 3 nuclear power stations so safety standards can be revisited after the crisis in Japan. The German government, facing pressure to reverse its plan to extend the life of Germany's 17 nuclear reactors as domestic opponents of atomic power, took Japan's worsening nuclear crisis as validation of their views. Talk about the reaction now around the world, these protests that are taking place.
Well, the protests are huge, Amy, and specifically here in the United States, we're facing 2 very tangible issues in the near term. The owners of the nuclear plants all across the United States, including these very old reactors, some of which are virtually identical to Fukushima 1, are going in for license extensions. And so you have reactors that are 40 or approaching 40 years old, more than 30 years old, and the owners are asking the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and getting approval to extend their life. I hope that the NRC and that the public in general will take note that these reactors now cannot withstand these kinds of pressures and should absolutely not have their license extended. Secondly, we're facing in the Congress pressure from the Obama administration and from supporters of the nuclear industry to give them $36 billion in loan guarantees to build still more nuclear plants. This is something that really has to be stopped, because we've seen in Japan, and both Kevin and I have been there, and we've seen the kinds of things that the industry has said, the kind of safety that they claim that they can deliver, that these are false promises. And I tell you that the Japanese industry assured the Japanese public that Fukushima and there are 55 reactors in Japan, all of which are on earthquake faults and near the ocean. The Japanese industry assured the Japanese public that these reactors could withstand exactly these kinds of events. This is not a surprise, what's happened at Fukushima. This was predicted. We've predicted similar things here in the United States, especially at those reactors in California. They are going for license extension at Diablo Canyon. This is unconscionable, especially in light of what's happened here. So these are tangible things that are happening. These demonstrations around the world will certainly escalate, because we've seen now that the nuclear industry cannot be trusted, and this technology simply does not belong on this planet.
Canada has such a dubious nuclear history. We gave India the bomb and helped Pakistan get nuclear weapons too. We sold a reactor to the dictator of Romania for jam and coal. Our engineers watch shaved head prisoners build it. When our own reactors leak, the government reopens them, even with no backup generators at all. Let's spend a few minutes with Greenpeace nuclear campaigner Sean Patrick. And by the way, Sean gives us a website with a very different plan, a way forward, even solving the climate problem without nuclear power.
A big issue that I'm concerned about is the independence of our federal nuclear regulator. You may recall 2 years ago, the Harper government fired the former president, Linda Keene, for forcing Atomic Energy of Canada to install earthquake-resistant emergency backup systems on its NRU reactor. At the time, the industry kept saying, claiming this is a low-probability risk and just dismissing it. But, you know, a few years later, I think Linda Keene is being vindicated. And what was she trying to do? She was trying to do her job, which was impose international safety standards, which we can quibble about whether they're enough. But I think we have a politicized regulator, and that raises a lot of questions of trust. So I think we should have a review in Canada of our nuclear regulatory system and our reactors as to what level of safety is tolerable for the Canadian public.
And did I hear a rumor in Canada that in the financial press that the public employees' pension plan was considering buying Atomic Energy of Canada Limited, the purveyor of nuclear equipment to the world?
Yes, OMERS is looking at buying ACL. And this raises a whole other discussion. The federal government is trying to privatize Atomic Energy of Canada Limited. So that's our vendor of the CANDU reactor design. And one of the problems they're having is no one wants to buy CANDUs. Even though there was a lot of talk of a nuclear renaissance worldwide for the past 10 years, it hasn't actually meant a lot of sales, and that's because the reactors are still really expensive. And CANDU, as a niche reactor design, isn't picking up any sales. And it's a huge drain on the public purse. So the Harper government's actually trying to do a good thing, which is stop the bleeding of federal taxpayer dollars. They gave them $892 million last year. But the problem they're facing is no one wants to buy it. And now there's seemingly a deal OMERS is looking at with SNC-Lavalin and trying to invest in it. Whether that's a good investment for the owners of those pensions, that's a complete other question. And Greenpeace is following the situation closely because we want to make sure that in any sale, the risk does not remain with the federal taxpayer for reactor construction and repair. Those liabilities should be with people that want to build reactors. It's called the polluter pays principle. And right now, ACL backstops and reduces the cost unfairly of a lot of reactor projects by using federal taxpayer dollars.
So just to make sure I heard you right, the Canadian government gave almost $1 billion to this company and they haven't made a single reactor sale in that year or in even years previous?
Oh, yeah. It's a little absurd. We've given over $20 billion to Atomic Energy of Canada since 1952. They've only ever managed to design and sell one reactor design. CANDU-6, which was developed in the 1960s. And since then, they've never been able to sell any other, get others off the drawing board. And as I said, it's a lot of bleeding that's going on. A lot of money that went out in our budget last year was to pay for the cost overruns for reactor repairs in New Brunswick and in Ontario. And again, what goes on is they sign these risk transfer agreements where the operator of the reactor says, ACL, you repair the reactor. If there's overruns, we don't want to pay for it. And ACL, which isn't accountable for things, signs these deals, and then when cost overruns happen, they just pass it on to the federal taxpayer. What that does in our electricity markets is that provides an unfair advantage to nuclear operators because they're getting this huge federal subsidy. Whereas if they had to include those types of costs up front, green energy and conservation and local generation would look and be a lot more competitive.
Are there new reactors planned for Canada, and what will this Japanese situation do for that?
Well, one of Greenpeace's biggest concerns is in Ontario, the McGuinty government is pushing forward with a plan to build two new reactors at the Darlington site east of Toronto to replace the Pickering reactors when they close in 2020. So we've been asking, why would you do this when there are more cost-effective options? They were told in 2006 new reactors would cost $6 billion. Came out in 2009, it would actually cost $26 billion. In spite of the facts changing, the government has stayed wedded to this plan to build new reactors. And at the same time, we've had no public forum that actually looks at alternatives, such as green energy, whether they're cost-effective. And the safety reviews, which is going to be a big concern in the Japanese context, significant accidents, as we've seen in Japan, they haven't been on the table of environmental assessments either. And that's something we're going to be demanding in the weeks to come.
We're all using electricity, Sean Patrick, and we don't want to just turn out the lights. What is Greenpeace's answer to our energy needs?
We've produced a document worldwide. It's called the Energy Revolution. And we do this modeling with the German Aerospace Agency. And we look out to 2050. How could we stop climate change while ending nuclear hazards using existing technology? And we've been running this modeling for about 10 years. We've actually been shown to be conservative when we first did it in 1998. And our projections for 2010 for wind power, we were conservative and wind power is outshooting our own expectations, which gives us hope. But we have put out an international report on that. It's also been modeled for Canada, showing how we could replace nuclear stations while fighting climate change. In Ontario last year, we put out a report specifically with the Pembina Institute, showing how it would be cheaper to invest in a portfolio of green energy to replace the Pickering station and build new reactors. And that's a very important part of this debate. Nuclear power is the only industry that has never been able to reduce its costs. Green energy, though, we're seeing innovation every year, and part of that is these are small sources of power. Every year, they develop a new generation, and they learn from it, and costs are coming down. And I think that's one of our greatest hopes for fighting climate change. Green energy is already more cost-effective than nuclear power, despite the fact that nuclear power has received trillions of dollars in research subsidies over the past 50 years.
Can we find these reports online, and where?
Go to greenpeace.ca, and you can find our Energy Revolution report, as well as the Green Energy 2.0 report on Ontario and new reactors. And there you can also find, we're trying to post, as soon as we can get it up, any new updates on the Japanese situation. They're monitoring. When we know things that are confirmed, we try to apply updates, and it's to our best knowledge of what's actually going on to help people sift through the different speculation that's going on in the media.
From Greenpeace Canada, we've been talking with Sean Patrick. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're swamped and busy.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
That's all we can squeeze in today. Much more to come. The chain of Japanese reactor failures isn't going to end this week or next week or the week after. It will change. It will change the world. It will change your life. Count on it. I know programs about anything nuclear are the least popular we can make. We hate to hear about it. The risks and realities are so awful, they hurt our minds. Humans in mind and body never evolved to handle the power of the atom and the building blocks of energy and matter in the universe. Bye-bye from Alex Smith from Radio EcoShock for this week. Find our website at ecoshock.org.
Tell me your fears.
Okay, it's everyone here.
You mean just all of the people?
Yeah, and all of their peers. And all of their pets and their chandeliers and their cigarettes. I haven't smoked in years.
don't even know. Everyone's f***ed and they don't even know. Everyone's f***ed. Everyone's f***ed. Everyone's f***ed. Everyone's f***ed and they don't even know. Everyone's f***ed and they don't even know. They don't even know.